What's going on, good people? We are back in the building. Episode 7 of the High and Outside podcast. It's your boy, Dante. You know where to follow me at, October Zone Tay. And, you know, for branding reasons, my Instagram name may turn into my Twitter name real quick. So you may actually be able to find me on IG too as well. But you already know, for all things Barber's Chair Net, make sure you follow the Barber's Chair Net at Barber's Chair Co. on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/thebarbershairnetwork. We have 4 different tiers, all very affordable, like I always say. $5, $10, you blow that in a month easy. So just, you know, shop with us, you know, help us grow the brand. We really appreciate that. For anything Barber's Chair merch related, you can lock in at bcnetshop.com. And for everything else Barber's Chair, from articles to editorials to live content on the field. And as you all know, Bears OTAs just kicked off. So 79th and Hallis is giving you some great content. Make sure you check in. Lock in with us at thebcnet.com. We have a full show today. We have the full cast in with us. You know, one of our cast members is Stanley Cup chasing right now, you know. But let's bring them all in. Courtney, we're going to start with you. How you feeling?
You know, I am feeling all the residual effects of a playoff push. I'm not on the ice, but I feel it. You know, this shit is a grind. You know, the commercials say it takes everything. It takes everything.
Hey, we are glad to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Sid, how you feeling, my boy?
Life is good. Life is great. School year is about to end. Summer is about to start. I can finally focus on baseball the entire way through. I can finally see the Mets play in person. Life is good.
I know. We love to hear that. Malik, my boy, how you feeling?
I'm good, man. Memorial Day weekend here. The unofficial start of summer. College World Series. Baseball starting to heat up, like Sid said. NBA Finals coming on. So I'm feeling good.
Very true, bro. NBA Finals are close. I know none of our teams are in it, but I mean,
hold on, that's not true.
Hold on, who's your team now, bro? Here we go. What? Who's your team? Oh, you're a Knicks fan. I take that back. My apologies. My apologies. I forgot. You know, like it's crazy. I hate every team that you like, but like you are a Knicks fan.
No, Sid, did you peep how quick he was like ready to jump you? That was crazy.
You never know, because like, you know, people will be, oh, I'm a Yankee fan and a Cowboy fan. I'm like, oh, you're just full of shit. So,
bro,
like,
he's a Mets fan. I think he's allowed to be a Knicks fan. I feel like also the two were kind of synonymous.
Hey, gang.
You got it. My bad.
I watched Candace Parker's baby father play for my team.
Yeah, you've earned this. Y'all been gonna let Hallie send y'all to hell, but you got this one.
Dang.
No, we're not getting to that. It could be a long night. No, we're gonna start off in my city. We're gonna start off in Atlanta, man. It's been it was a slow start for the Braves, but they kicked it off and now they are, you know, back above 500. Been a lot of close games, but they are getting 2 big pieces back. As we all know, Spencer Strider made his return last week. It wasn't the Spencer Strider we used to seeing, and he wasn't happy with his performance, but he is back. And now, you know, it's crazy because the cover you see for this podcast isn't going to be what it should have been, because I thought this man was still going to be in Gwinnett. But tonight, Ronald Acuña Jr. was scratched from the lineup, and he'll be headed back to Atlanta. He'll probably be in the lineup tomorrow against the Padres, making his debut almost 1 year to the day that he tore his ACL. You know, we talk about how rare ACL tears are in baseball, and this man is torn both of his. But he's back. He was seeing the ball well in Gwinnett, hitting the ball all over the place, taking walks, you know, being the Ronald Acuña we know. He played 9 innings yesterday, and then he'll be back and added to this team. And like I said, this is a team that started the season 0-7, but since then has been one of the best teams in baseball, despite, you know, being pretty average on both sides of the ball, which is kind of crazy. You've had your starting pitching step up in spots where they need it, but you still haven't had the same amazing offense that you've seen from this team. So I'm going to ask you all, before I give my opinion, but How big are these additions to Atlanta, and what do you expect from this team? Is this one of those moments where you just take off, or is this still going to be some, you know, growing pains with putting them both back into the lineup? Sid, I'm going to start with you because I know you're our resident Braves hater, so I'm going to let you get your opinion off first.
Braves hater, that's crazy because these are two players that I actually really enjoy, Ronald Acuna and Spencer Strider. Spencer Strider, like, I really think he's one of those guys who I love to see pitching, just fastball, changeup, slider. That's all he really has. But strike zone takes it as a challenge, like when a guy gets a triple, to hold them on third base with his pitching ability, which obviously isn't the best way to move forward in the playoffs, and we've seen that from time to time. But who cares about any of that? Because Spencer Strider is so cool and Ronald Acuna are both so cool. Them coming back is a huge jolt to the arm. Ronald Acuna is must-see TV. He's lightning in a bottle every single time. Like, when you add someone like that on the base pass, someone who can, I think, you know, put up a 60-70 season if he had a full season of it. There's just a lot to like about Acuna. I saw Spencer Strider after his bad outing, or one of his last bad outings, he said he really hates that Bryce Elder got sent down and lost that spot because Bryce Elder was saucing some really good baseball. So, you know, the self-awareness that Spencer Strider has with, you know, his addition, the lack of self-awareness that Ronald Acuna might have with his addition, I think all things should be balanced. But I think the Braves, you know, regardless of anything, we're obviously going to be in competition for winning the NL East. 0-7, 0-5, OMG, it doesn't really matter. Like, baseball is a really long season, and it doesn't really matter how you start, it matters how you finish. So,
no, that's fact. No, that's facts. Courtney, how you feeling?
Admittedly, I haven't been watching a ton of Braves baseball recently. That being said, it's always a good thing when you can get Spencer Strider back into your rotation. How did he throw the other day? It was what, like three home runs?
No, I'll show you right now. I'll say it right now. He had a he went four and one third innings. He gave up six hits, four earned runs, and three strikeouts.
You know, I don't like to clamor too much on people in their first start back. You know, we'll talk about it a little bit later when we get into that Mariners Astros series. George Kirby just came back tonight, got shellacked, you know. So I like to extend people a little bit of grace. That being said, I mean, it's going to be nice having Ronnie back in the lineup as well. Maybe that sort of rubs off on the rest of the guys in that lineup. They went from having, you know, some pretty solid numbers the past couple of years offensively to being in the 20th to 30th range team-wise in offensive metrics in a lot of different categories. I don't want to get too much into that, but yeah, it'll be good to have them back. Gotta be honest. I don't know if I'm still on the Braves train. I don't know. It's still early. It's still early. Things can change very easily. We'll get into it again here in a minute when I start talking about the Astros. Never count a team out, especially not this early. That being said, we'll see.
Yeah, the Braves, I feel like the Braves are very much a team to look out for to make a move. Like, this is very much a we might have to shake shit up type of situation because you got a couple log jams at positions. Drake Baldwin's been on fucking fire. Sean Murphy's still a very good former all-star catcher. And the dilemma is you can't DH one because Marcell Ozuna is a DH. You're not going to put him in the outfield until Profar gets back because that's really just putting you at a negative and something that you just can't do. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. But Malik, before I let you go and close this out before we go to the next topic, I'm really interested to see how they react to Ronald Acuna. And, like, I know it's going to be a positive, but I think he's such an electric player to where, like, for example, if he hits a home run tomorrow, like, the building's going to shake. But the energy that that's going to put into that team, I think is what could be really, really special, especially because when you look at a guy like Ozzie Albies and the way he's been struggling, like, that's his guy. So if, you know, Ronnie comes back, you saw the energy when he was just on the bench, walking around, talking to guys, you know, hyping his team up. So like the connection he has with his team is there. And one thing I really loved was the fact that, you know, before he could even sit down and, you know, we posted the video. You all saw the press conference. Before he could really sit down in the seat, they asked him about, you know, the tweets and everything. And he said, yeah, I went to, you know, face to face, man to man, said what we had to say. We good. It's time to go. It's time to play. So if, you know, that's the case and that's the energy he's bringing, I think this is a situation where the Braves could really take off. And like, especially, and like I say, I know how great Ronald Acuña is, but if, like you said, Courtney, that rubbing off on the rest of the team, and if you can get Ozzy going, that really changes everything. Like that changes so much for that team. So I'm interested to see what he does tomorrow. I know he was scratching the lineup today, so he should be traveling back from Gwinnett. Gwinnett's not too far from here, so like I'm assuming he will be in the lineup tomorrow against the Padres team that's lost 6 games in a row. So they're struggling. This is the perfect time to put him back in there. And I think that the Braves can really go crazy. But Malik, how you feeling?
I'm just happy for baseball that we get Ronald Acuña Jr. back, who's going to be an all-star outfielder last season before he went out. We saw him bounce back from his last injury with, what, like 70 steals when he came back from the previous ACL. So him and Spencer Strider both, just seeing good ball players, great ball players, been two great ball players, is always a good thing. I do think it's going to give the Braves some juice. It puts a question in my mind of, do they add more depth to their bullpen, their starting rotation, or like you were talking about, do they go get another bat with how loaded they are at some of these spots? Maybe a shortstop, maybe another left fielder or something. You know, Profar, he'll be back soon, but I believe he's not eligible for the postseason with that performance enhancing band. So I want to see what else they add. But whenever you add a guy who I think before he got hurt was a top 2-3 player in baseball, right behind Otani, kind of near where Tatis and of course Judge are too. But the way his speed and power, all that combination, I love watching Ronnie play. So I'm happy he's back.
Yeah, definitely. And before we move on, I'm gonna ask y'all, like I said, Drake Baldwin has been, you know, extremely good, not only at the plate but behind the plate. You know, he's been, you know, above average as a catcher. Is this a situation where, granted, you have the young talent, but with, you know, the type of pitching that may be out there and or just the moves you feel like you need to make to shake this team up, would you all be willing enough to give up Drake Baldwin, or is it more of a situation where you keep the talent and just try to make something work? Courtney, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, I have never been one to advocate, I guess I should say, for hoarding prospects. As we've seen with a few different organizations, right now we're dealing with the impact of maybe not giving up enough assets to acquire proven big league talent. You know, it's always this idea that, you know, it's going to pan out. I got to be honest. Again, maybe that's probably why I'm not in a Major League Baseball general manager. I will trade anybody for proven big league talent there. Cause there's never any, like, unless you have a proven body of work, you just never know if someone's going to pan out. And again, yeah, sure. A big leaguer can come in and they can stink it up, but at least, you know, when you made that decision that it was sound when you made it, you never know if that's going to happen with any prospect or minor league talent. So that being said, yeah, you got to do what you got to do. If the Braves truly think that that's something that will help them get to a championship this season, sure. Do I think that will help them get to a championship this season? No.
No, that's very real. You know, I think a lot of times we've seen them, and, you know, Snick said it when he pinch hit, you know, Rosario, who is now no longer on the roster. They've been trying to recreate this magic from that World Series run. And like I said, it may be time to just reset some things. Sid, I'm going to go to you next. How do you feel? Like, is there a thing where, you know, Drake Baldwin, He's a younger catcher than Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy is the proven all-star. Do you move either guy, or is it more of a situation where, you know, we're going to try to make this work?
I cannot think of the last time the Braves had just like a young guy behind the plate that they developed.
Brian McCann.
Wow. That's okay. Yeah. Vintage. It's been a while. I remember old Mets guy Travis d'Arnaud was there for a while. Shout out him for being a 347 hitter against the Mets for his entire career after he left us. Young talent is hard to find. Young talent is hard to pass up in the MLB, because in the MLB it comes with the damn near guarantee that this person is going to be on your roster for 6 or 7 years. That stability is not the same for older stars, especially aging stars. But I think the infrastructure of the Braves is good enough to where maybe you trade Murphy. Like, you know, his contract is fairly movable, just because, you know, AA and his deal with Satan. I don't know what negotiating tactics he employs, but people accept very low numbers to play for the Braves. Sean Murphy accepted a not amazing number to play for the Braves. So no, I think you keep Elder, Baldwin, just so that, you know, when it is finally time to move on, you can say you had this developed piece that moves along with the infrastructure that will stay. Because obviously, like, everything is going to come down soon for the Braves, or at least sooner rather than later. So yeah, I think you keep a guy like that for sure.
Malik, take us home. How you feel?
Like Courtney said, you sometimes when you don't sell high on prospects, you wait a year later, you try to hold off, and then you try to move them, and now you can't even get a sack of peanuts for them. So I agree with that. But with him being a catcher, it's hot out in ATL. He's young, got him under control. I leave him in ATL for this year. Let him learn a little bit over Murphy. It's going to be tough for him not catching. He probably won't get four out of six. Say he catches the six games out a week. I think he probably only catches two or three of them with Murphy up. Unless he can stay out and hit, you know, but there's also the pitcher preference when it comes to the catcher position too. But I think the depth at that spot is important, more important than a lot of other spots where you have another guy who could go over and play second base. You have another guy who maybe could play outfield. When you find a catcher, especially a catcher who could hit like Baldwin's been doing, it'd be hard pressed for me to sell now, unless you're talking about bringing in a superstar. We all know it's, The talks of them even trading Paul Skeens would be crazy, but you know, somebody like that. Do you do that? I don't think I do that move though for like a Framber Valdez 1 year rental type player, you know. So I'm keeping them, but at the same time, if it's to get a superstar, if it's to get, you know, one of those guys, then I'm not risking not getting them just to hold Drake Baldwin with Murphy on the team.
Can I pose a question?
Of course.
A Drake Baldwin package for Mike Trout, maybe?
They have. I mean, he'd be one of the pieces, and of course they got Ohapi there, so he wouldn't yeah, be full.
Yeah, and are you renting Mike Trout? Because I mean, Profar, you signed Profar to that deal, and you know Mike Harris is not moving off center. Ronnie's in right. So are we moving Profar? Like,
I think you punt Ozuna, maybe you punt Ozuna at some point, and then you DH Mike Trout for the rest of his life.
I think that's
a lot of money.
They don't spend any money
for sure, but that's my point. That's a lot of money for someone who, first off, has not in recent years proven that he's able to stay healthy. Right. And two, for an organization that has actively shown that they don't spend money. So if I'm thinking about it, if I'm Alex Anthopoulos, it's why would I make that trade? Like, you got the steal of the century, or so you thought, when you did give Profar, what was it, 42 million for 3 years? Something like that?
Yeah, something small.
Yeah. Nothing too crazy, unfortunately. You know, shit happens. I can't say what did or did not happen. But shit does happen, and he's obviously banned for 80 games plus, obviously ineligible for the postseason.
80 games in the post.
So yeah, that seems to be a theme in the NL East. What y'all got going on over there?
A lot of dope.
NLM.
Yeah, and that's my thing. Like, with 80 games plus the postseason, it makes you, like, it kind of sticks you. Because do you want to make a move? And just for the record, the biggest contract on the books right now is Austin Riley. I think he's 10 years, 250, so $25 million a year. So, Ronnie has a larger. No, he don't. But no, he doesn't. Austin Riley's the highest paid player on the Atlanta Braves. But yeah, Austin Riley's the highest paid guy. So you have money to spend. With that being said, you're making money hand over fist with the battery. You've been bragging about that for years. And so I think it's time for them to, we're going to really see where they are and how they feel about actually, extending this run. Because, we always talk about windows closing quickly in sports. And, 2021 is only 4 years ago, but then you're going to look up and say, 2021 was 10 years ago. Like, it's kind of like, and for somebody who, when you go to the ballpark, one thing I love about it, they had it in Turner Field and they have it now at Truist, where they have all the division titles that they won in a row. And it's like, it's one of those things where, like, you see the one where they won, 10 in a row and they had one World Series. And then you look at the other side where it's like 7 in a row and they have one World Series. So it's like, it may be a thing, like, is history repeating itself? Are you going to be able to stretch this run out? So I think that's something to look into. Like I said, having those guys back is going to be amazing. And the Braves, I think they're going to go on a run, but they kind of need to go on a run. And if you don't, and if you aren't able to do that, then it may be time to start to really reevaluate some things and see what you want to do roster-wise. But speaking about, reevaluating things, and I'm going to let – of course, we're going to let the two people from Texas hold this segment down. But the Texas Rangers and the Houston Astros, like two teams that, have won World Series in the past, 3 years? Out of the last 3 years, each team has won a World Series. So, we've seen a success. And this year, it's been a slower start. As we've said on this show several times, there's no need to panic about baseball in May. But at the same time, when you look at these teams, they haven't gotten really what they wanted from the rosters and what they expected. Especially, we're going to talk about the Astros. I think I'd probably be more worried about the Astros right now than the Rangers. But Courtney, I'm going to swing it to you. Let us know what's going on down there in Houston. And we don't have the fine button here, but you are definitely muted.
That's a If you guys don't know the fine button lore, make sure you tune in to an episode of I'm Not Gonna Hold You, airing on Mondays and Fridays, and also Wednesday's Patreon special on the Barbershare Network. Anyway, as I was saying, the Houston Astros have, we've gotten accustomed to a certain lifestyle. Those of us who have watched the Astros, that they're always looming, whether or not they are, in first place or not, that they are always looming. That being said, I'm not terribly afraid of the Astros right now. Their lineup is marred with injuries and a lack of left-handed hitting. Their pitching staff is non-existent. They have lost, I think, 3/5 of their starting rotation up until this point. And again, we can get into, the sort of issues that they're dealing with. Hayden Wesneski, who they got, if I'm not mistaken, was in the Kyle Tucker trade. Yes. And Ronel Blanco just went back to Houston, or is back in Houston now, I should say, who's, best case scenario, all he does is end up on the IL, and that he doesn't require any surgery. Spencer Arrighetti, which again, we can also unpack the Astros and just how bad they are at sharing injury information with the media and with the public as a whole. Definitely thought that when the unfortunate Arigetti injury, for those who don't know, Spencer Arigetti did end up on the injured list during, I think it was BP in Seattle, maybe. Anyway, he got hit in the thumb. And they said, oh, you know, he's only going to be out for about a month, no big deal. And now he's been out for about 2 months, and he's probably not going to be back for another month, month and a half. And then, again, going into this series against Seattle this weekend, again, I know we'll unpack that a little bit this weekend, but, you know, just the order of the rotations messed up. And ultimately, again, you can't blame injuries on, you know, every team has injuries. That's kind of just the state of baseball. But to a certain point, Dana Brown does have to be held liable for the roster construction on this team. You know, again, the lack of left-handed hitting in the lineup is a problem. All a team has to do is just throw out their any right-handed reliever against that team and on any given night, and you know, you've marked safe, right? You have like three bench guys that are basically just the same guy in a different font, in what's his name, Salazar and Caratini, who can't play every night. Chaz McCormick, who they are probably still holding on to him just because they kind of have to. But yeah, they have no left-handed hitting. They really needed a left-handed hitting outfielder, which would have been great if they made that move for Verdugo before the Braves did, but they didn't. So again, it's just poor roster construction by Dana Brown. The Astros didn't want to spend money. Okay. You ask Jose Altuve to play a new position. Anyway, I'm saying a lot. All that to say, the Astros are always looming. This is a big series this weekend that they started this evening against the Mariners. And again, I know it's baseball. Anything could happen. Last June, they were 10 games out and they ended up winning the American League West. So anything could happen. Never count a team out. But that being said, it is time to panic if you are a Houston Astros fan.
No, definitely. Sid, how you feel about the Astros right now, bro?
Yeah. Built bad. It's always hard to sustain World Series success. And the way that they have, they've had a lot of World Series success. You're not going to replicate that. I don't think you're going to come anything close to that. Like, I would not be surprised if I'm done seeing the Astros win, you know, AL pennants in my natural life. Like, that, I'd be fine with that, really. But yeah, they're built terribly. And then it hurts even more that, again, you could have brought the Unkrun back home. Like, Kyle Tucker is love in Chicago. Alex Bregman is the best offensive player on the Red Sox. What is the team to do when you gut everything but your aging star on a team-friendly contract and your oft-injured, non-versatile hitter who will hit 400 in June, July, August, September, October? There's just a lot of nothing going on, and I think the nothingness started when they kind of refused to, like, get a real first baseman. And they thought, like, yeah.
They got him, Sid. They got him. They gave Christian Walker all that money thinking, we don't need Kyle Tucker. It's fine. We don't need Alex Bregman. We got Christian Walker. He'll take care of all the problems, because the only problems we had in that lineup were with Jose Abreu. Now, mind you, up until this point, I am almost certain that Christian Walker has a lower OPS a lower on-base percentage and lower slugging than Jose Abreu had up until this point in the season. So that's just not sustainable. Again, when you give the one guy who was supposed to come in and fix all of your problems that you thought you had, comes in and doesn't perform well. Again, yeah. It's a mess of their own making. It's poor roster construction. There's no depth there at all, at any position, really. There's just no depth. Maybe at catcher, they've got like three catchers that can hit. That's cool. Dubon has, you know, obviously got great versatility, but I'm not seeing anything there that makes me think he can solidify himself as an everyday guy. Jake Myers has been fantastic. I'll give him that.
He's been a bright spot.
100%. Jeremy Pena has been great. Isaac Paredes has been great. But again,
another good acquisition, but still, like you said, built bad.
Yeah, correct. Those aren't the guys though that are supposed to be. I mean, obviously Jeremy Pena for sure, but like, where is everybody else? Again, Jose Altuve, 35 years old. I said it before the show started, like, he's getting older. If you just look at some of his different numbers, you know, there's a lot of, and I don't want to say regression, but there's just changes that he's made in an attempt to kind of catch up with a game that listen, Father Time is undefeated, right?
Right.
Like, you're undefeated. He was, and again, I don't like to use defense as a cop out because he was never a gold glove second baseman to begin with. So yes, you are learning a new position and the woes of having to switch from second base to left field is one thing, but I don't know. I just, again, this team might be cooked.
They're cooked food.
Yeah. And Malik, I'm going to ask you, obviously I want to get your opinion on the Astros too before we jump into the Rangers, the team that you cover. But yeah, how you been feeling about the Astros, bro? Because you've been able to see them up close and personal as well.
Man, last Sunday, I think, was a perfect example of just how the Houston Astros have been the last few years. Great start for the Rangers. I can't off my mind think. I believe it was Jack Leiter who was on the mound, I think. Excellent start. Joe Espada gets ejected in like the second inning. I want to say it's a no hitter. Yeah, it was Jack Leiter. No hitter for 6-7 innings. You know, he comes out. Ranger pitcher Chris Martin. He takes a right-handed pitcher Chris Martin. Warms up pitch. Can't even finish his warm up. He goes out. Rangers throw in a lefty, and the Astros, Isaac Paredes. Because you're in fear of Jose, the legend of Jose Altuve, who's only hitting under 200, I believe, recently. You're in fear of Altuve. Paredes is on the team to hit lefties, and he smashes a bomb. Astros take the lead. Astros take the tie the series. But you know, a split with the last dub for your team, it feels more like you're in the weekend series with the dub. You feel like you won the series. I say that just to say, like. And even tonight, we're recording this Thursday night, up big on the Mariners right now. Jose Altuve, he went yard tonight. The AL West just isn't good enough to put them away. So despite all the Astros' flaws, which is all true, the roster's bad. There are no lefties. They didn't address the outfield at all. Yordan's injury seems, we talk about it, it seems a lot like that Kyle Tucker type injury where, oh yeah, he just has a little sprain in his foot. He has a, you know, whatever, this and this. And as the days go by you find out, oh shit, Kyle Tucker's knee was dislocated, fractured, and he was even in the playoffs, he was cooked. He was out there just to be out there. You're dealing with that with Yordan now with his hand injury. So, and then like you said, your questions in the bullpen, with the starting rotation, everybody getting hurt. Framber on his 1 year deal, Framber's not signing. He told them already he's testing free agency, but you can't trade him now that Blanco's out. Do I think that they can ultimately reach a World Series? I don't think so. Especially if Yordan's not in, I think that hurts him a lot. But with the way that we'll talk about the Rangers in a sec and the way that the Seattle Mariners just can never close and the way that the Angels and the Athletics are just having fun right now. I don't think you can count out the Astros to win the AL West.
Yeah, I mean, like we say, bro, it's never say never. It's never too early, you know, but never too, yeah. They'll be all right. It's a lot of baseball left. Now, there's another team in Texas, and this is the one that spent a shitload of money. We talked about it. You got your World Series out of it, though. So, I mean, at the end of the day, when you spend that type of bread, you spend to win and you won. But the Rangers are another team as well. Our sneaky Cy Young pick, Jacob DeGrom, has looked really good. He's looked very good. I know he's been flirting with 100.
Does that hurt you when we say that, Sid? Does that like do like? Does it hurt a little bit? Remember what I said earlier in the chat, when I was like,
I want Chris Cuomo to be like, when will it end? That's really how I feel about Jacob DeGrom. Like, when
he looks great. I know. And not only does he look great, I mean, you've seen it the last few starts where it's like he's flirting with the fact, like he has to remind people, like, yeah, I could still throw 100 if I want to.
Dog,
like,
he's completely redefined Jacob DeGrom.
It's been really good. It's been really good. But I mean, I'm gonna throw it to Malik first because I mean, like I said, you've been seeing firsthand what's going on with this ball club. Just give us a little bit of just your take and how you feel about what's going on with the Rangers. And it's just like, again, it's just, you know, we don't panic about May baseball, but you know, what's going on? What's some things that we can look for with the Rangers that, you know, they really need to fix?
Oh man, I keep hearing that don't panic, don't panic. And I'm trying not to, man. But it feels like this offense hasn't been hit outside of a great World Series run. I don't want to take that away. They earned it. And I said it a few weeks ago, I believe. Since July of 2023, this offense just hasn't had any juice. Last season, it feels a lot like this season, where people weren't getting it done with runners in scoring position. People are swinging crazy. The averages are so low. It's worrying me. It's concerning me, this offense. They just went to New York and got swept 3-0 by the Yankees, lose a 1-0 game, Nathan Eovaldi through the day, one mistake, 1-0 game loss. Jacob DeGrom, I believe he left with a 3-2 lead in the eighth inning last Wednesday night, lose that game. Over their last 13 starts, DeGrom and Eovaldi have a 1.37 ERA. And they're just two of the brightest spots on one of the best pitching staffs I've seen the Texas Rangers ever have. With the way the offense looks right now, you get a few people hot here and there. I don't see how they break out of this slump. And another thing that it comes down to is health. Corey Seager, since 2023, four hamstring injuries that have had him on the injured list. He's on there again right now. He hasn't been able to do any on-field work because it's raining out in the East Coast now, so he's done a little, I think, on the treadmill. You don't know when he's coming back. You trade Leody Taveras to give Evan Carter a shot. Oblique injury for Evan Carter. You're not sure when he'll get back. Wyatt Langford's shown that he's one of the best. He's Wyatt, you know, best player on the team, but he'll go down with an injury just like Josh Jung. So if these guys can't get healthy, if Corey Seager doesn't come back, with some of the approaches that these guys have, I don't think Brett Boone can save them. I don't think it was a hitting coach issue. I think it's deeper than that with a lot of these guys. At some point, you're going to have to make a move. And then even the bullpen, another thing I want to highlight, Kirby Yates, who I believe he's had some shoulder fatigue now, but you don't sign Kirby Yates. You don't sign David Robertson. Instead, you go cheap and try to piece together a bullpen that, for a few weeks, they did their thing. But when you have them having to pitch in these 2-1 games, these 1-0 games, where you make one mistake and you're down 1-0, it feels like you're down 3-0. I think it's just been too much stress on the bullpen that wasn't properly addressed. I'm not mad at them. Like you said, they spent their money a few years ago on the lineup. I don't think that there was a whole lot you could have done outside of maybe a struggling Doc Peterson and Jake Berger, seeing what Nate Lowe's doing in D.C. and seeing what Paul Goldschmidt's doing in New York. I think Goldschmidt should have been the only one that can replace Nate Lowe. But besides that, it's on the players. It's on guys like Adolis Garcia. It's on guys like Marcus Semien, who just – they're all-stars. They get paid like it. They're in those situations. You have – they're up with runners on, down by one, one out, no outs. Can't get the runners over, can't execute a plan, so – it is a lot of baseball left. The pitching is going to keep games close, but I'm going to be honest, man. I don't see a championship team in Arlington this year with the way that their offense is set up. Maybe they can flip a switch. I don't know what it is. I've seen crazy go on, but there's just no consistency, in anything with the offense going on right now. Great defense and pitching though.
So Malik.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sid.
So have I ever told you my favorite nightmare ever?
No, what is it?
It is the Cy Young years of Jacob deGrom and Zach Wheeler playing next to each other with having all of these same problems where we say, yeah, well, we're playing, we're, you know, we have like a nice combination of young guys who are at the time Brandon Nimmo and Michael Conforto and Jeff McNeil and a young Pete Alonso when you moved off first baseman. And we were, oh, yeah, well, Robbie Cano, like, yeah, he's a veteran. He gets paid to do so. Like, and then it's, oh, yeah, Michael Conforto, he's a Scott Boras guy. He gets paid to do so, or he wants to get paid to do. Congrats. You're a Mets guy now. Like, you're just watching the Jacob deGrom Mets in Texas. Like, that's all you're doing.
It's tough because, like, I don't think you sell off, obviously, on a guy that's good. They're locked up. He's locked in for a few years. But what do you have that pitch and you can't waste it. So who do you sell off? I don't think there's a way Adolis Garcia makes it through this season. I question if Marcus Semien can too. Big contract that he has. I believe he's $26 million for the next 4 years around there. Garcia, he doesn't have that contract to back him up, and you got to get something for him. But I think they're two guys that some other teams could need. Los Angeles Angels, would they be crazy enough to call up Semien and maybe you sell off for a bullpen piece or something that can get a team going? I don't know. Obviously, that's worst case scenario, but if the way that those two are performing, if the team as a whole are performing, what were you in June next? Oh man, if we're 2 weeks before the All-Star break and this offense is the same, man, the band of brothers from that World Series, I think you got to change something. You got to change something. You got to add something, or you won't get back for another. And I don't even want to be dramatic. Like, you won't get back for a long time. There's going to be a lot of questions with health, leadership. Who knows if this is Bruce Bochy's last season with the squad?
Yeah, no, that's very true, bro. Like you said, especially with a guy like Bochy at his age. Courtney, I'm gonna ask you about the Rangers. Any, you know, just quick thoughts on that team, you know? And we're gonna move on to another topic that's, you know, been very pressing.
Yeah, my only thoughts are, again, as someone who has different reasons for loving both the Rangers and the Dodgers, but this is why I will never, ever, ever understand people's vitriol with teams that spend money in order to put together a winning team. The Rangers won in 2023 and their ownership essentially decided, you know what? Good enough for us. That's enough for us. That will sustain us for however many more years. And again, that isn't to say that the people that are on the teams aren't still competitors, especially if they won in 2023. Of course, you want to win again. But what can you do when your ownership does not put you in the position to continue winning because they're pinching pennies on bullpen pieces and, you know, additions to the rotation? Now, mind you, Patrick Corbin has been a very bright spot in this organization. Someone who, with all due respect, has not been worth a damn for the past 4 or 5 years. Somehow, some way, the universe rewarded him with a relatively productive, healthy season. Good for him. But other than that, the Rangers really skimped out on adding pieces that would make this legitimate pieces that would make this team more competitive than they are. And again, that's why I can't be mad at teams like the Dodgers or the Mets for spending the money that they do, because even if you don't win, you're making an effort to win and to be competitive. And in winnable divisions like the American League West, it's incredibly disheartening to me, both as a fan and just, again, just a lover of the game, you know, that more teams just don't want to win more. And it, like, this is not Moneyball. Like, you got to spend money to win. It's just the name of the game.
No, you are absolutely right. And speaking of spending money, there's a team in, you know, what is it, Flushing's Queens? Are they in Flushing's?
Yeah. Or Willits Point, Flushing.
God. All right, yeah. Shout out to the nanny. But no, The New York Mets, man, you know, again, we talked about this earlier about, you know, the panic, the extra oomph they've been trying to put on everything. But it seems like after the Subway Series, things have just amplified even more. You got people making up false rumors about Juan Soto taking a private jet away from the team to get the games, him and his family. You know, people clocking his body language and saying, you know, the Soto shuffle is gone. Is everything okay? He's regretting his decision. A lot of shit. There's just really, you know, out of left field for a team that is, you know, they recently, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies took over first place, but they're right there. They're still right there, and his numbers are still pretty damn good. So, Sid, and I'm going to pass it to the panel as a whole because, of course, we talked about just how, and this is my little theory that, you know, a lot of people agree with that the NFL, the way that we judge everything week by week, we've taken that prompt and we've put it on every sport, and it's just absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, when you have sports where you need to go month by month as opposed to week by week, a lot of these reactions we get, it's just like, yeah, y'all just want to make content. So as a resident Mets fan, Sid, I'm going to shoot to you first because of, you know, what did you see in the Subway Series? Was this something where, you know, you see a guy who's just not, you know, feeling himself, or is it just, again, like we said last time, much ado about nothing? Like, people are just looking for something to talk about.
Right. I think it's much ado about nothing, really. But at the same time, this sounds so lame to even say. Like, at some point, you probably should question, like, hey, what's going on with Juan Soto? Like, not in a bad way, not in a hyperbolic way. And it's even funnier that we are speaking on this day. Today is a very special day to me. On this day in 1998, Mike Piazza was traded to the New York Mets. So this is a big, you know, a big day for pieces who have been traded to the Mets. And yeah, I think it's much to do about nothing. But I think this calls into a bigger issue, not only the ethics of journalism, but like kind of just how far we have fallen from like the proper way of, I guess, doing this. And I say this as, you know, someone who takes a lot of pride and you know, the work that we do on this podcast, two homer game for Altuve, a fucking course. You know, I fucking hate that guy.
I'm watching it right now. 9-9-2.
Oh my fucking god.
This is also, hey, and we're tough to interrupt you, but quick shout out to Lance McCullers.
Yeah.
He gave up one unearned. It should have been unearned versus the Rangers, I believe, 1-5. Today he had given up two in the first inning, I believe. And I mean, did his thing since. So quick shout out to Lance McCullers.
While we're on this Altuve note, I had to look it up just to see what pitches, because I said before the show started that dude is batting 190 against fastballs, but everything else is, you know, the metrics are a little bit better. Both of them were off sinkers. He's still not catching up to those fastballs. The bat speed is down a couple ticks, but he got that sinker, every bit of it.
I tell you this. Altuve is Short King Hall of Fame, so I will always respect that brother. He will always have my vote in anything. And I know you've been looking crazy out there in left field, but brother, you keep hitting that baseball. You are going to the Hall because you can hit that baseball, and we are proud of you. You have repped us for years. But Sid, no, back to your amazing Mets.
I think this poses a bigger problem, certainly with New York City sports media, but with sports media as a whole. We've kind of gotten to the barstoolification of how we go about this whole media deal. Like I was saying, I take a lot of pride in the work that we all do. Like I talk to you guys every single day about how fantastic I like truly believe you guys are, what you do and how you present everything. I am like incredibly proud of that. And so to see like, and I'll even say the name, Michael K, to see Michael K like doing this, dog, like like this is like, what are you doing, dog? Like this is gross. Like I cannot believe that one free agency signing has completely broken the landscape of sports media in this way. And I thought like the Kevin Durant thing was bad. Like, this is, thank God more people don't like baseball, because like this would be the worst day of my life. Like, this is terrible. But I, at the end of the day, I think it's much to do about nothing. They're bad for Juan Soto standards. Juan Soto, he had a bad year in San Diego. Mike Piazza had a bad year. Francisco Lindor, his first year in New York, he choked out Jeff McNeil over the shift and came to the press conference with his full chest and said, "Yeah, man, we were arguing about a raccoon." Francisco Lindor choked out that man, held him on the wall, and said, "Learn your fucking place." That's exactly what happened. But hey, everyone's years are different. I've seen some crazy stuff. It's New York sports media. Like, I have seen the Mike Piazza gay rumors. I have seen non-binary Juan Soto rumors. Like, there's just been so many different things over the years. So, like, New York sports media will always find a way to keep it interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, and it's always been strange to me, the early overreactions. And I think, you know, with our generation, we've seen it with every, you know, quote unquote super team, or anytime there's a seismic move or a guy moves from one team to another for a huge sum of money, where it's just instant overreactions. I think pretty much every, you know, remember the Miami days, every LeBron team was like 500 after like 30 games, and everybody's panicking and like, oh no, what's going to happen? And then the man went to the finals 10 straight years. And so it's one of those situations with Soto where it's like, because it's New York and because the Yankees reign supreme, I wonder how much of it is legitimate and how much of it is just, you know, we have a Yankee bias that's built in. So we're always going to, no matter what happens, if he sneezes wrong, we're going to sit there and say, see, he fucking hates it in Queens. We told you. Like, we told you this was going to happen. Malik, let me know how you feeling from what you've seen from Soto. I do think the Soto shuffle not being there anymore is kind of interesting. I saw that and I was like, are you okay, bro? You know, not saying he doesn't want to be a Met, but maybe he's just, you know, just not in his bag right now. But Malik, what have you seen from Soto and everything that's going on and with that team in Queens?
I mean, that's exactly what I was thinking. I do think it's a little, you know, it's New York. They're going to make a lot out of a little bit a lot of time. But if you're having fun out there, man, hit your Soto shuffle. Show some of your swag. I think he showed it whenever they played the Yankees, and he tips his cap to the crowd. He calls time, and he lets them keep booing him. Like, that's the type of stuff we like from Juan Soto. But also, I was having this discussion with some of my friends. I know he got his big contract, but he can kind of chill out. I feel like he can still chill out there because, like you guys talked about, Francisco Lindor is over there. Pete Alonso is over there. Those two guys are face of the franchise type guys. I think to take a lot of pressure off Soto while he's trying to, you know, it's pressure. He's got the big bag. They know he left, you know, he left the Yankees for the Mets. It's a lot of pressure. You don't want to, oh, I left for the World Series, or I left for the money, as opposed to trying to win a World Series. I definitely think there's a lot less pressure on him to not he has time to get acclimated. Really what I am trying to say. I do want him to show that he's having, I mean, I don't, you know, he has fun. I don't want to be like that mad unk, but that's when I feel like Soto's playing his best. You know, that's what people want to see. And I was literally looking forward to him hitting one against the Yankees over the weekend. Obviously that didn't happen. You know, that's how baseball goes sometimes. I'm sure he wasn't trying to not hit a damn baseball. One for 10. He had a few late game. I think it was like a late game single on Saturday, but nothing major. And then I also heard he wanted to have the mic on Sunday Night Baseball. And then day before they canceled that. I don't understand why they wanted to put it on him in the first place if they were going to ask him questions about being a Yankee while he's in the Met uniform. That's not the way to go about it. But I think time will tell, and winning is going to fix it all. And like you guys talked about, he's in a division that's going to be tough, especially with Ronnie Acuna back. So let's get that. Let's, you know, he'll go on one of his heaters, and I think after he hits that heater, then we'll start seeing some more shuffling, and it'll quiet the Mets and New York media down for just a little bit till the next thing pops off.
Yeah, no, definitely. We're going to see, man. I think it's going to be interesting, but I also think, you know, with that type of money, the scrutiny is always going to be there. And it's what you get paid for, bro. Welcome to New York. You dealt with it last year, now you got to deal with it this year. But before we get out of here, we're going to do what we always do. We got our series for the watch. We got four series for you. We're going to let Courtney Calderbrook go first, of course, so she can get out of here. We got to thank her. This was her flu game. She's had a couple of these with us, you know, really pushing through with everything she's got going on. And we really appreciate it. So now, Courtney, give us your series to watch this week, and you can head on out.
And I appreciate you guys for always holding me down. For real, I really appreciate you. I'd be doing my best to be here because I love being here. I look forward to this every week. But yeah, the throat is killing me. So we're about to go to sleep. That being said, the series to watch for me this weekend already started this evening. It got off to a bit of a rocky start for one team. That is Seattle. They did get George Kirby back into their rotation, which, again, I'm not holding a first start for someone who has not seen major league at bats since, I think, February 24th. And that was, I think, right at the beginning of spring training. He was in for like an inning, and then they were like, oh, right shoulder inflammation. Let's go ahead and shut that down. And I'm glad, again, that he's able to even be active this season again. But yeah, an absolutely abysmal start for him, pulling up his numbers right now. Kirby only pitched three and two thirds innings, 6 hits, 5 runs, 5 earned, 1 walk, 4 Ks. But yeah, not a great start for him. And this series is kind of interesting, just because going into this game, the Astros were, I think, 3.5 back. So again, season's not over. There's still a lot of baseball to be played. But to say that the Astros don't need to win this entire series, they kind of need to win this entire series, at least to get themselves in a good position. Cause the last thing you want is, you know, you drop these next 3 games and then you're, you know, clawing your way back, to the top. I mean, this is not the team, in my opinion, that is going to be able to overcome the same sort of difficulties that they did last season. Again, like I mentioned earlier, when they were 10 games back in June and still came back to win the American League West. That being said, Friday, Emerson Hancock versus Ryan Gusto for the Astros. Saturday is going to be a great matchup. That's Brian Wu versus Framber Valdez. And then Luis Castillo on the mound for Seattle on Sunday versus, we aren't sure yet, my sneaking suspicion, just because, again, they did skip Hunter Brown's part. Not, they didn't necessarily skip him, but he would have been on 4 days rest if he pitched on Sunday. And I think just with the increased workload and knowing that obviously Ronel Blanco is likely going to have to go on the injured list, they decided to start him on, I think it was Tuesday against the Rays. And then, that Brandon Lowe home run that had an expected weighted on base average of 0.10. That's freaking nasty. Would have been a home run in only one of 30 ballparks. And that one ballpark is Steinbrenner Field. Again, natural disaster. Please don't cancel me. I understand why they have to play there. This is not an Oakland Sacramento situation. But yeah, sorry. Going back to the original series, I think it's going to be a great series. Some great pitching matchups. I do think that the Astros will call up Colton Gordon, which, fun little anecdote for those who are curious. When he was going through his Tommy John rehab, he decided that he wanted to become a pizza delivery driver. So that's exactly what he did. And he was like, yeah, I made some pretty good money. And it just, you know, kept me, level headed and gave me a nice distraction while I was delivering pizzas. And he said that one of his favorite moments was when he like delivered pizzas to some mansion and it's like to the security guards that were working the party, and they gave him $100 tip. And he was like, yo, this is sick. Maybe I should just keep doing this. And now here he is, probably likely making the start on Sunday against Luis Castillo for the Astros.
No, definitely, Cornino. It's definitely going to be a series to watch. Let everybody know where they can follow you. And like I said, I'm going to let you get on out of here.
Yeah, you can follow me at 1-800-COLIBRO on Instagram and Twitter. As Dante mentioned earlier, we are in the middle of a Stanley Cup chase right now. So that's really where my head is at. But I'm always, always willing to talk baseball. So hit my DMs, hit my mentions, whatever. If you have questions about anything, this brain is just a little encyclopedia. It's like a little hamster on a wheel when it pertains to baseball. So hit my line.
Hey, Courtney, once again, thank you for stopping through. And as usual, you have the best Texas hats I've seen in a very long time.
The collection goes crazy. The collection goes crazy.
But what, no, we're going to definitely.
They might be crazy, but the hats and the branding synergy goes crazy.
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. But no, you take it easy. And we got a lot of great series. We got a lot of great series. We got one more for y'all. I'm going to go with mine. And mine just got a little more exciting. We talk about Braves Padres. And the reason it got a little more exciting because, like I just said earlier, Ronald Acuña Jr. is back. And I'm going to be in the building tomorrow. I may actually do the whole five-hour thing because a lot of people don't know the stadium opens up 5 hours early for media. So I may be there at 2:30 for a 7:15 game start. But I think it's well worth it. I think you're talking about, even though the Padres have lost six games in a row, two very exciting teams, two young teams. I think the Braves are really trying to get their get back. They lost two out of three to the Dodgers. So, you know, that's, you know, after getting swept by them to start the season, that's not really what you want. So I think with this team, a team that, again, you may potentially face in an NLCS or at least a playoff series, it's important to start to, you know, stack those victories and get that confidence, even though it is early and things can change. But I think Acuña coming back is going to add a different energy to this ball club. Like, I think it's one of those situations, and Sid, I know you don't want to hear this, but I think it's really one of those situations when you add an elite talent back like that, even though we're still waiting. They've added two elite talents back, but Strider still has to find his groove. I think Ronnie's going to find his groove a lot faster than everybody else. And this series against the Padres, against a team you're going to see down the line, this is one of those series where you want to start, you know, letting it be known that, yeah, the beginning of the year, that was a fluke, even though I know most Major League Baseball teams are not hanging their hat on what they did opening weekend. But if you're the Braves and you want to continue this trend of, you know, playing better and stacking more victories as you continue on in season, this is another great opportunity to start that. And I think you're going to get that. Fernando Tatis Jr., must-see television. We all know that. They got a few guys on that team that are really good. I got to check the pitching matchups. But I think the Braves can really do some damage here, and that, you know, it could possibly have wild card implications going forward. But my series to watch this week, and I will be in the building, is Braves versus Padres. Sid, I'm going to go to you. What's your series?
We got a three set in the NLDS rematch, or NLCS rematch. I'm sorry. I'm not used to that. We have the Dodgers and the Mets. We have Clayton Kershaw and Griffin Cannon going on Apple TV tomorrow. We have Tony Gonsolin and David Peterson going on Fox on Saturday. And then we have Landon Knack and Kodai Senga going on Sunday on ESPN. The Mets have not been playing fantastic baseball, but it's early. But at the same time, this is probably the time to establish yourself as those guys. We see Shohei Ohtani's heating up with the leading 14 homers. Weirdly enough, Francisco Lindor is leading the Mets with 10 homers. Juan Soto, I think, is at like 4 or 5, and then Pete Alonso is at 9. So yeah, we're getting to a place to where now the wins are starting to string together. These are 230-win ball clubs. And yeah, let's just all just have fun. Let's all just have fun today or tomorrow when this series, let's just all have fun. I think it'll be a great series. I think it'll come down to, pitching, you know, still May baseball. It's hard to say, but this is a series that you really want to, you know, you want your home crowd to show up and show out. And you want to take 2 out of 3.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, like I said, with everything we expecting from this division and it's how tight it's going to be, you want to start stacking victories and, you know, really getting into your momentum, especially against a team that you could potentially see down the line. Malik, we're going to let you tell us your series to watch and close this out. What you got, bro?
All right, well, I apologize to anybody that's going to be put through the hell of watching Rangers White Sox this weekend. I wouldn't do that to y'all. Maybe this other, I think this other series, though, these aren't two of the best teams, but it's like Sid said, we're having fun. The Los Angeles Angels, who are what? I believe they've won 7 in a row. They're cooking right now. Big sweep for the A's. They welcomed the Miami Marlins into town. Sandy Alcantara. A guy that's going to be on the trade deadline. He's been struggling all season. He'll be on the bump. I'm not sure what day this weekend, but he'll be on the bump this weekend. The Angels offense is hot. Scored 10 runs Thursday against the A's. Zach Nato returned from the IL a few weeks ago. I'm looking 387, 8 RBIs, 2 home runs, 10 runs scored over his last 7 games. He's looking real good. Logan O'Hoppe's looking real good. Taylor Ward on fire. And Mike Trout, he's back working out. I'm sure he'll be back soon. We'll see what the story is with him. But I always like to look up in the standings and see that the Angels are just a few games out of a playoff spot, because that means Ron Washington has job security for the time being, at least. We'll see. Like I said, Angels are hot. I think they can continue to stay hot. Let's see if they can hit double digits playing a weaker Miami Marlins.
Yeah, bro, it's gonna be very interesting. I agree, man. We all are always gonna root for Ron Washington and hope him nothing but the best, man. We want to see him try to really build that up, because like a lot of people feel like he just took that job because it was more so of a, I don't know how many more opportunities I'm actually gonna get, so let me, you know, get in here while I can. But I think he can definitely make something happen. And that's all we got for y'all today. It was another great show, man. We really appreciate everybody that's been tuning in. Like I always say, if there's anything you want to see from us, let us know. Feel free. We're all very active on social media. So if there's anything you need to see or want to see, like I said, we're going to start a very special segment where we bring on everyday fans, the casuals, as we like to say. And we're going to start educating people, man. We want to know what y'all don't know about baseball. What are you confused about? What stats don't you understand? I know we throw out a lot of things, FIP, WHIP, all type of shit. So I think it's something where, you know, with us being the yappers, as we say, and it's on us. And we're going to take it in upon ourselves to really educate people about the game of baseball, man. I think that's going to be real fun. So I'm looking out for that. Make sure you look out for that. And anything you want to see, anything else show related, just let us know. You know, follow, you know where to follow Malik at underscore team mill. Follow my boy Sid at Sid Sly Park. Follow me at October Zone Tay. For everything brand related, make sure you follow the Barber's Chair at Barber's Chair Co. on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/Barber's Chair Network. We got 4 different tiers, all very affordable. A lot of great content for you. Any merch related, we got hoodies, we got sweatshirts, we got mugs, we got hats. Got a lot of good stuff, man. Shop with the brand. We appreciate y'all. We would appreciate it even more if you spend a couple dollars. You know, it would be greatly appreciated as we try to continue to build this thing. But anything merch related, you can lock in at bcnetshop.com. And for everything podcast related, editorials, everything we got going, once again, 79th and Hallis is back. We're at OTAs, and we're continuing to just get more content on there for y'all. King's Landing will be back, and we will continue with the High and Outside podcast. But make sure you check in with us at thebcnet.com. It's been great. Shout out to Courtney. Shout out to y'all, bro. And we will be back next week.